and LTC.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, okay. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Tom Parrish with the Scarlet Leadership Institute, and welcome to our monthly Lunch and Learn conference call. If you would like a copy of today's slides, please send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com, and I'll get a copy of those out to you. And at this point, without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to the world-famous Joe Scarlet.
Thanks, Tom, and welcome, everybody. Our guest today is Doug Stone. I'll tell you a lot about him in just a moment, but a couple of short commercials before we get onto that. First of all, our next executive leadership program is starting in a couple of weeks. It's starting on the 28th, and the class is not yet full, so if anybody's really interested in that program, we still have some slots open. You can go to scarletleadership.com. Second announcement is next month our conference call will be a little bit earlier in the month. It'll be on October 2nd. And we're thrilled to be able to tell you that Marshall Goldsmith will be on the call with us. Marshall's a world-renowned executive coach. He coaches some of the CEOs of some of the largest companies in the world. He's the author of one of my favorite books called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. And the title of the book describes exactly what's in it. So look, you can sign up right away for us for the class. It's the call. It's October 2nd next month, Marshall Goldsmith. Today the topic is difficult conversations. We have a lot of people on the call today. Doug Stone is our speaker. Doug is the author of a book called Difficult Conversations, and he's also author of a new book called Thanks for the Feedback, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Doug and his partner Debbie Goldstein have been speakers and instructors for a full day at every one of our executive classes since we started in 2006. And this subject is really it's a hot topic for many of us. And I can tell you, the first time I sat through that class, I thought to myself, wow, I wish I'd had this same knowledge 25 years earlier, because I would have done things in a lot more positive way. We all run into these moments of having difficult situations, mostly at work, but also sometimes with your spouse or your family. And knowing how to handle these conversations in an effective way can make all the difference in the world in the outcome. So anyway, we're looking forward to a great call today. And with that, I want to turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thanks, Joe. And welcome, Doug. We're so glad to have you with us. I know that when we do our evaluations at the end of the retreat week, your class is always one of the very top ones. And we hear about difficult conversations that students have all through the year as they come back for their follow-up sessions. So it's important information. It's an important element of being able to be a good leader. And so we just want to talk with you a little bit about it today.
Well, I am really delighted to be on the call with you all. As you know, and as Joe mentioned, we've been with Scarlet really since the Institute began. And so, as I always say, you know, you guys are doing this education stuff right, and I'm delighted to be on board.
Thank you. Let me begin with just a general question about why are these conversations so hard? Why do we put them off, dread them, get sweaty, you know, and really just feel like, oh, my gosh, I'd rather eat glass than do this?
never heard it put quite that way, but that's about right. Yeah, we get anxious. We're up at night. We can't decide whether we should raise something or whether we should ignore it, and we go back and forth. I think there's a few common reasons. I think it's different for everybody, and it depends, obviously, on the conversation itself. But when we've been researching the common kinds of conversations that are difficult across contexts, we find that they do have a few things in common. They tend to be conversations that elicit strong emotion, right? So it's either on my end, on the other person's end, but there's going to be some emotion in there. They tend to be conversations where there's a big gap in perceptions. We just see things differently, or we might want different things from the outcome of the conversation. And these conversations tend to be the ones that have the potential to sort of threaten how we see ourselves in the world. And we call that identity. We all go through the world with a sense of who we are and what's important to us and what our values are. And sometimes these difficult conversations are the ones that, if they don't go the way we hope they'll go, they have the potential to give us feedback that causes us to to sort of wonder, well, that, you know, who am I or what do I really stand for? And so that can be enormously threatening. And we're dealing with all those levels, the level of the topic of the conversation, the emotions, the identity. We're trying to deal with all those things at the same time, which is pretty complicated.
It is complicated. And yet, done well, sometimes they can make a very big difference in how people feel about working for us or for the company or whatever. They can move us right along in our progress in growing as leaders. So I guess the thing to do is to learn how to have them and learn how to have them well. So what should I do to prepare for?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, Mary, you're raising sort of a paradox, which is sometimes people think if they're trying to decide whether to, you know, let's say you have an employee or a colleague who's doing something that's not quite right or is being difficult in some way, and you're trying to decide whether to raise it. We often think, well, you know, if we have the conversation, maybe it'll go badly or there'll be emotions or whatever. And so then we don't have it, and we're analyzing whether to raise it or not raise it just based on our image of the conversation. And we're forgetting that not raising it has its own set of costs, because someone's not improving or they're doing something inappropriate in the workplace, whatever the topic is. If we let it go, it's not like that's cost-free. Sometimes those things will correct themselves, but sometimes they'll just get worse. And so we're just putting those conversations off for another day, and they just might be harder and harder conversations as the days roll along. So let's imagine that you decide to have the conversation. And Mary, your question is about, well, how do you prepare? And my first observation would be the biggest mistake that most of us make around preparation is that we literally don't prepare at all for a lot of these, right? If we were going to make a presentation to a client, or if we were, you know, going to make a sales pitch or an argument in court or whatever, we would prepare for it. We would know what the points are we're going to hit. You know, we'd have an idea of where this was all going. We'd have all the information. When we have difficult conversations, we think, I'll just go in and talk to the person. And, you know, in talking to them, I'll figure out what it is we're talking about. And then it shouldn't be a big shock to us that we go in, we have the conversation, halfway through, we're kind of lost or we're not sure why we're having it. So I think the key to the whole preparation question is really just do think of it as something you can prepare for. There'll be a lot of unexpected things that'll come up for sure. So you're not trying to script it out, but you can think about before the conversation. You can first of all think about what's your purpose. Like, what are you hoping to get out of the conversation? Why is it that you want to have it in the first place? You can be thinking about what is it that you want to communicate, what's important to you in this conversation, and then always reminding yourself that part of the conversation is understanding what's going on with the other person, what's important to them, how do they see things. And if you do that, even that, those just simple few questions, what's the purpose, what's important to me, how do they see things, you're going to be much better off when you actually go to have the conversation itself.
Exactly. And I think sometimes we go into those conversations, and Joe, I want you to weigh in on this in just a minute. We sort of have as the purpose to still be friends when we're done. And I think sometimes we lean too heavily on the I'm not going to offend, and not heavily enough on the this is what needs to happen side. And so we end up and we part as friends, but nothing changes.
Yeah, that's Joe, you can weigh in whenever you want, but I think that's a big issue. You know, I think that comes back again to purpose. If, for example, you're giving someone difficult feedback, we often think to ourselves, well, I have to give them this negative feedback, but it's really important that they like me afterwards and that we're still friends, which, of course, those are good things, and we want those things. And you want to give the feedback in a way that is compassionate and thoughtful and sensitive.
Right.
But at the same time, if your purpose is to make sure the person hears what it is you're saying, if you're so worried about their reaction to it, sometimes you don't even end up, you know, I've heard of people who literally fire somebody and the person who got fired at the end of the conversation doesn't know that they got fired because the person is so worried about the reaction that they're so unclear about what's going on, and that doesn't really do a service to anybody. So go ahead, Jeff.
Doug, I've had experiences on both sides of the coin where I get into a conversation and really never get to the point, and you just sort of, well, I really don't want to damage this relationship, and therefore you sort of beat around the bush and don't get to it. And then I've had other situations where I've been, you know, I got to straighten this mess out right now, blah, 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 go get so-and-so. And you start talking, and you realize, as you said before, you hadn't planned a thing, and you wind up saying things you don't plan to say, and you create all sorts of emotional issues that you shouldn't create. And I'll tell you, that the whole issue, the whole topic you mentioned earlier about planning is so important. And I remember some of the most difficult conversations I'd had in business now. I would spend days or sometimes weeks planning it and thinking to myself, how do I want to conduct this? What are the results going to be? What do I expect to accomplish?
Yep.
And am I staying away from emotional issues here? For example, I remember one time early in my career, I told somebody I had a bad attitude. Well, that's so vague that nobody knows what you're talking about. You got to be really, really specific. You got to say, here's what you did yesterday morning, and here's what other people saw, and that is indicative of a bad attitude. But platitudes and just vague descriptions of what you're talking about do nothing but confuse the person on the other side of the coin.
That's exactly right. In fact, because of my recent book is on feedback, I've been talking a lot about feedback. I was talking with an interviewer on the radio a few months ago, and he was talking about this business about the vagueness of feedback. And he told me a story where his producer said, you know, on your radio show, you've got to be edgier. You've got to be more edgy. And the radio guy was, the interviewer was thinking to himself, like, why do I have to be edgier? Like, what does that mean? Should I use bad words on the air or talk about sex? Like, that's not what I want to be doing. And he was, like, tormented by thinking, like, how can I be edgier? But finally he realized, as you say, Joe, he didn't have any idea what the person even meant by that. So he went back and asked, and the person said, well, you know, you got to be edgier. You got to be more emotionally vulnerable and open with your own emotions.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it was just the person that gave the feedback thought he was being clear when he said edgy, and he had an image in his head that means emotionally open and vulnerable. But it didn't communicate that at all to the person he was giving the feedback to because it's so vague.
I recall, I don't remember the exact situation, something similar when I was trying to say that kind of thing to somebody. And I've learned over the years that let me describe an example for you.
Yeah,
and just use an example or two of what you're talking about so that people can understand. And that often drives the conversation. On the other side of the coin, if somebody is telling you to be edgy, say, can you give me an example of what edgy means?
Right, exactly. What does edgy mean? What would be an example of how it would sound if I was being edgy?
Right.
That's exactly right. Because most of the feedback we get is actually very vague, you know, even from well-intended people. So when you're on the other side, you got to be the one that asks about what the meaning is.
I want to move on just in the interest of time, but and it is related to this. What if I suspect that the other party is going to have a very emotional reaction? I mean, I know when I'm emotional, it's probably not the best time for me to have the conversation, but if I know somebody else is likely to respond in a very emotional way, should I wait then?
So get the tissue box out.
Yeah, exactly. So a few things. One is, yeah, if you're emotional and they're emotional, or if somebody's emotional in that moment already, you know, that sometimes the emotional aspect can be useful because it can get to the heart of things quickly. But very often, I think it does make sense to wait until you're feeling you're calmed down a little bit, and to wait till the other person's calmed down a little bit. But the But imagine that both people are calm, but you're about to tell the person something that you think will be upsetting to them. You know, that goes back to what we were just talking about, which is there's nothing that makes bad news good news. There's no magic words. Like if you're breaking up with somebody in a relationship or you're giving them very negative feedback or you're expressing some kind of disappointment, you can't make that happy news, right?
Right.
You can be compassionate, but you can't make it happy. So the thing that has always helped me with those conversations is I always think to myself, I have my job and they have their job. My job is to try to be clear, compassionate, but clear. And their job is to have their honest reaction. So if their reaction is they feel hurt or they feel angry, that's their right in that moment, and it might make a lot of sense for them to feel that way. And
right.
So you just have to hang in there and try to be understanding and thoughtful, but the fear of them being upset can't cause you to not give the message if the information is important enough that you thought you should say it in the first place.
Exactly. You talk about
in the class the three mind shifts. Well, a couple of things I want to ask you. One, you talked at the very beginning of the class about the inner voice,
not the
voices, but the voice, the inner voice. And you talk about that, you know, that's what is not being said. That's what we're thinking in our heads. You want to comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So we tend to think of communication as there's me and there's you. Let's say two people are talking. So there's Doug talking to Mary. So there's two voices, two things to take account of. But really, if two people are talking to each other, there's really four different voices going on. So right now, there's my external voice, the things I'm saying to Mary, and then there's the things Mary's saying to me. But then each of us has our own internal voice, our own thoughts and feelings, some of which we're saying in the conversation, but some of which we're not. So there's really four voices. There's my internal voice, my external, Mary's internal. And sometimes that's maybe interesting, but the question is, well, why does that matter in communication? It matters when, especially in difficult conversations, when the gap between what I'm thinking and feeling and versus what I'm saying starts to get too big, it starts to be really hard to communicate. So let's say I'm getting feedback from somebody and they're telling me, you know, you don't do your projects on time and you're not responsible. And I'm sitting there going, well, thank you. This is very helpful to me. You know, I'm glad you're bringing this up. And my internal voice is thinking, you're totally unfair. You don't know anything about my work. I don't know why you're the one who's even giving me feedback. You play favorites. If that gap between what I'm thinking and what I'm saying gets too big, I can't listen very well anymore, and I can't really talk very well because I'm sort of preoccupied with, there's too much going on in my head to really communicate well. So one of the goals in clear communication is to try to make that gap smaller, and not necessarily by just saying everything that pops into your head, but by being aware of what's in your head and thinking of, thoughtful ways, useful ways to get it into the conversation.
Right. And we always think that what's in our head is really right. And it may not be necessarily what's coming out of our mouth, but that leads me to one of the first of the three mindsets, which is moving from certainty to curiosity, from I'm right and you're wrong to I wonder why we see this so differently. And that's something that we can explore that helps us get more to the heart of why is it that we are so different? Why is it that we're seeing this so differently when we both saw the same situation and our interpretation is totally different?
Yeah, exactly. So, because we're so focused on our internal voice, well, really just because we are human beings, we spend our whole life inside of our perspective, and we experience our whole life from our own personal perspective. And so we have come to believe that the things that we think are, you know, they're right and they're true and they make sense, and we get lots of feedback that that's the case. And then we come across somebody who disagrees with us, and so it's just automatic that we know that that person is wrong. So imagine that two people are arguing about, you know, you're going to hire one person, and you know that in the 30 years you've been working at a company, you've never seen a candidate as good as candidate A, and then suddenly candidate B comes along and the other person in the hiring committee wants candidate B, and you're thinking, this is ridiculous. Like, you're crazy, or you don't know what you're doing, or is this person related to you or something? Like, why are you even interested in them? So the frame is totally, I'm right, you're wrong, and the purpose of the conversation is for me to show you why I'm right or why you're wrong, and for us to do it my way. And, you know, it's normal that we all want to do things our way, and we have that interest, and that can be our goal. But as Mary, as you said, this shift from not from I'm right to I'm wrong, or I'm right to we're both right, or the shift is really from I see it my way makes a lot of sense to me, you see it your way probably makes a lot of sense to you, actually. And the first step for both of us isn't to figure out who to hire, it's to figure out why is it that we each prefer to hire someone different. And if we really understand each other at that level, then the who to hire question becomes much easier, and we're probably going to make a much more informed decision. But it requires you to shift away from this conversation is about me telling you why hiring person A is really the right person, shifting away from that as a goal toward let's understand why we're looking at the same two people, we're both working at the same company, we have the interests of the company at heart, and yet we each think a different person should be hired. That's actually interesting and probably somewhat complicated. Let's try to figure out why that is.
Exactly. And there's so many things that go into this. Good listening skills is so important here. And Joe, I would call on you because you are that person that very rarely just tells people how it's going to be. You're very solicitous of other people's ideas and thoughts and where they're coming from. And so you want to make a comment about this?
Well, I think if you're a good listener and really listen to people, it smooths over any conversation you're going to have, because people they trust the way you communicate with them, and I've always tried to be a good listener, and that sort of creates the environment in which you can have a more constructive conversation. People that don't communicate regularly, and then all of a sudden they want to have a difficult conversation, it's very erratic. Whereas in my case, because I talk so much anyway, when you sort of roll into these conversations, and it's easier on both sides.
Absolutely, it is.
And people really appreciate being listened to, especially by their bosses and the people that they respect.
Well, if I can just say a few words on that. Anytime you're in a leadership role, in almost every business I'm familiar with, the best ideas come from the people closest to the work. And if you're out listening to the people on the front lines, wherever you are, you're going to gain the most real information and be able to make the best possible decisions. Plus, people appreciate being listened to, and it makes all the difference in the world when the boss really listens to what people are saying, and it creates helps to create a teamwork environment. Additionally,
yes, there's huge power in being heard. Whether even if your decision is still the same as it was going to be, there's huge power in somebody feeling like they were heard. So I'll move on to the second mind shift, and that is to move from blame to joint contribution. And Doug, I know I talk about this with so many people. It's a subtle shift in my head, but it has a huge impact on how we see it, because it takes us from being adversaries to both of us working on this as a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, it comes down to sort of what's your purpose in this part of the conversation. If your purpose, let's say two people are, let's say Doug and Mary are having a conversation. If our purpose is we need to figure out which one of us is to blame for the problem that happened or for the problem that we're having together, That's one kind of purpose. And, you know, that often is followed by which one of us should be punished. So think about where that gets you. So now we know whose fault it was. And by the way, we don't agree because we both think it's the other person's fault. And now we know who's punished, and the person who's punished doesn't think it's fair. But have we done anything to fix the problem? Have we done anything to even understand the problem? So blame and punishment are their own topics that are out there. And, you know, if you need to talk about them for some reason, that's fine. But usually what we're trying to do in a conversation, whether it's at work or at home, we're not trying to assess, blame, and punish. We're trying to actually help people improve or fix a problem, make the product better, make the outcome better, make the employee better. So this shift from, well, who's to blame, instead thinking about, so my assumption is always that there are many factors. There are different things that are contributing to whatever has gone wrong. And so our goal is to try to understand those factors. So, for example, we all know that dynamic of, let's say you have two people and they have to work together, they have to collaborate. And one person would say, you know, I got to collaborate with this person. I'm always calling them. I'm emailing. I'm in touch with them. They never write back. They seem to be avoiding me. They're running away. They're irresponsible. I can never get them on the phone or by email. They're driving me crazy. So analyze from that person's point of view, you'd say, well, that other person is to blame for this problem. They're elusive and irresponsible. But the other person might describe the situation differently. They might say, you know, you're constantly hounding me with these questions that you should be answering on your own. You take up huge amounts of my time that shouldn't be taken up. You know, I can't get any of my real work done because you're always emailing and calling. So I try to put it off a little bit, and you're just impossible to work with. So the second person thinks it's the first person's fault for being too controlling and wanting too much time and so forth. And you could go back and forth all day trying to figure out, well, so whose fault is this? And we can all probably identify with either of these two people, or maybe sometimes both of these people. But the profitable question is not to ask, well, so which one of them is wrong or which one of them is to blame, but to say, you know, what is happening in this situation? What are they each doing to contribute to this communication problem they're having? And what could they each do differently to help fix it? And there are probably some agreements they could reach about how they might be communicating more effectively. That would be good for both of them. And it's nothing to do with blame. It has nothing to do with punishment. It just has to do with understanding what the problem is and then trying to fix it. Now, having said all that, it's also true that there are contexts where the purpose is to discipline somebody. And if that's the case, then that's a different kind of conversation.
Right. Right. Thank you. And then the third one is to move from intent, or me thinking that I know why you did this, and it's usually negative. In fact, it's always negative. It's usually, you know, you're trying to wreck my job, or you're trying to make me look bad, or you got up this morning to tick me off. And to move from that to the impact of the behavior. Really, the intent really doesn't matter. It's the impact of the behavior on our being able, either our relationship or our being able to get the job done.
Right. And so that's right. So understanding that people's intentions and people's impacts don't always match up, and you have to think about both of them separately in order to think clearly about a situation. My favorite example of this is always with cars, where, you know, you're trying to get to the airport and you're running late and somebody's in front of you driving really slowly, or somebody cuts you off in traffic. And one way or another, you end up thinking, you know, this person is horrible. They're irresponsible. They're trying to cause me to miss my plane. And, you know, that's the impact on us, is that we're frustrated and that we are being delayed. But their intention is so unlikely to have anything to do with any of those things about us, because when we're the person driving slowly, we have a reason, right? Why are we driving slowly? We're driving slowly because maybe it's raining out and we can't see that well, or maybe we're looking for an address, or we're slightly lost and we're trying to read the street signs. And that's what people do on the street. You try to drive well. So there's a million reasons why someone would drive slowly, none of which have to do with someone trying to ruin the life of the person behind them. But as human beings, we sort of jump to that kind of the worst case scenario in terms of other people's intentions. And so we do this in the workplace where, let's say, we feel like, you know, I'm always being scrutinized by my boss and just micromanaged, and my boss is, you know, he doesn't trust me, or she doesn't believe in me. And so we, because we're feeling unhappy with how the situation is going, instead of just saying, you know, I'm feeling anxious about the way we're interacting, which is the impact, we tell a story about what the person who's doing the behavior, the boss, is intending. You know, they're intending, they want me to feel bad about myself, or they want to make sure that I know that they don't trust my work. And that is, you know, it's possible that that's right, but very often in life, you can imagine from the boss's point of view, the boss is thinking, gee, you know, I got feedback myself that I'm not involved enough in coaching my employees, so I'm going to really get down and coach them more carefully. I'm being such a good person by doing this. I'm taking time away from my other responsibilities and from my family, so I'm sure this is really appreciated. So even if the impact isn't good, the intention in that case happens to be good. And so we just have to be really careful as we think through situations and as we prepare for difficult conversations, not to assume that we know what the actual intention is on the other side. And the problem is that if I assume that you have a bad intention, or I assume you're trying to hurt me, then we're starting the conversation out from a place that is we're just at a disadvantage, because I'm now angry with you about something that may not even be going on. I may accuse you of something. You know, why are you trying to always control me in the workplace? You don't believe in me. And those things might not be true at all. And yet they're going to become part of our conversation, and we're going to start the conversation in a big hole.
Right. So I guess the bottom line there is, don't assume.
Exactly.
Whenever we think we can get into somebody else's head and know what they're thinking, we're probably wrong.
Right. And so the advice there, it's not to assume that everyone has good intentions, because maybe a lot of people do, maybe some people don't, but it's just to remember that we just don't know, as you say,
right.
Don't assume. We do know the impact, though. We do know the impact, because that's something that we know firsthand.
Right. So that's something we can talk about.
Mary, if I can just jump in here for a second. We'll be getting to the discussion phase in a few minutes, and we've had a couple of questions come in by email, so let me just encourage you to go to the on the webpage, enter your question in the box, and then hit submit. We'd love to have a few more questions in. And also, we're at the point now where if you want to interrupt us, just hit *7 and start the discussion.
Thank you, Joe. I was just going to say that. We have received three scenarios from people, and I'd like to go through those first, and then we can get to the questions that people have live. The first one is an issue with my boss. I've taken on extra work when someone else left from the company. I've done lots of extra work for other people. I've seem to be being punished for bringing things to my boss's attention. It just seems like a bad situation with the boss. They were passed over for a promotion. They've been told over and over how much they are appreciated for the extra work that they're doing, but they're not being able to, but they're not being rewarded for that. In fact, they feel a little bit that they are being, that their life is being made a little more difficult because of it. So do you have any suggestions for how to begin a conversation with the boss around some things? And this is managing up, so it's a whole different perspective than talking with a peer or a direct report.
Yeah, so let me start. So it's a great question, and it's obviously there's a lot of complexity and context and nuance to this question, and anything I have to say, you know, is going to be of a general nature without fully knowing the details. But I think this is a matter partly of the question of getting really clear on criteria about, you know, so it's very hard to come in and say, I deserve a promotion, and therefore you should promote me. First of all, it challenges the authority of the other person. And it may be that you do deserve it, but they're not in a position to give it to you. But also may be that you don't deserve it, and they have information that you don't have, and so forth. So, another way to approach that, instead of approaching it as a kind of demand, no matter how skillfully you put it, putting it as a question, a joint investigation, to say, look, of course, as I'm at the company, the organization, I want to succeed and I want to be promoted. I want to do well. Help me understand what the criteria are so that I can meet them. And so that, let's see if we can develop some criteria that we can both look at in 6 months or a year. And I can understand, it can be more transparent what's going on. And it may be that the person responds by saying, well, you're not going to get a promotion in the next 10 years, and then you can inquire about that. Or it may be that they say, well, so here's what you would need to do, or here's what you're not doing so far, even though you're doing all these other good things, there's a couple things you're not doing. So you're, even as you're feeling overlooked and treated unfairly, you're still in inquiry mode to really really try to understand. You're not letting your boss off the hook. You're not being soft or just rolling over and, going along with anything they say. You're really trying to be very assertive, but you're being assertive about the questions and trying to really understand the process.
Doug, and one of the things that I coach executives on all the time is you ought to be having regular conversations with your boss about the future. And what, just as you just said, what do I need to do to get to the next level? What is the criteria? And it shouldn't be shouldn't come to a frustrating point. It should be an ongoing conversation. If you want to get ahead, you need to chat with your boss about. Needs to know that that's what you want to do, and say, what do I need to do to get there? And what special schooling should I have, or what events should I take? What do you need to do to get ahead?
Yeah, exactly. And that makes the whole process more transparent, and it also kind of puts the boss on your side, right? Because now the boss feels like, you're coming in regularly. They're sort of either explicitly or implicitly, they become a kind of mentor to you, and they're now on your side wanting you to succeed. This is in the best of circumstances. Obviously, not all situations are perfect, and not all bosses are easy, and not all bosses are even, particularly competent, but hopefully many are, and trying to make these conversations more regular is going to have a positive impact, at least on many, many bosses.
Thank you. Our second scenario is we're getting ready to lower the commission rate of our salespeople. And even though many have not taken advantage of the higher rate that was available, they will still view it as negative. So how is the best way to make that announcement?
So this is a great question, because this comes back to the intentions and impact distinction we were talking about earlier, which is the typical way to do this is the person making the announcement says, unfortunately, here's what we're going to have to do. And they're thinking, this is just reality. It's for the good of the company. Everyone will understand. And then it's received on the other end. It's received. The impact is not, okay, we understand. This is just what has to happen. It's for the good of the company. It must be right. It's received as we're being punished for some reason. We're being penalized. They're taking something away from us that's ours. They don't understand us. They don't care about us. It's very easy, even in the best of circumstances, it's easy to spiral into that kind of thinking when you feel like something is being threatened, which is your remuneration. That's the place many of us go, which is not just I'm going to be making less, but management doesn't care about us. They would have figured something out. They're punishing us. We don't even know why. So if you come back and think about it from the management side, it's so important to have a real discussion about it, not just a quick announcement, even if you think it's very clear why it has to happen. And in the discussion, you have to say, it's going to be confusing to people, and we want to explain as clearly as we can exactly how we came to this place, why we used to have the compensation level set the way we did. Here are the various ideas we looked at to make things better. Here's why we landed on this one, and here's why we think this one is really, even though it's painful, here's why we think it's the best thing, but we also want to hear what your reactions are to it. So you really have to talk about why you came to the decision you came to, and you also have to talk about why you're not doing the thing that people want you to do. In other words, you have to make it clear that you discussed the possibility of keeping it the way it is and that you understand why that would be appealing. And now, even though we discussed it, even though we understand why it's appealing, here's why we just made the decision that we couldn't maintain that. And so you'd sort of talk that through so that people aren't sitting there thinking, you don't care about us, you didn't even think about this, you just mm-hmm. are punishing us.
Mm-hmm. And again, being willing to hear what they have to say about it, even though it may not change the outcome, is so important.
Exactly. And so someone might say, look, we understand why you had to lower it, but we don't understand why we weren't included in the process. Well, that might be a great question to ask. So the only way you're going to hear that is if you're open to actually talking about it. And then you might say, that's right. Actually, now we think about it, we should have included you. Or you might say, we thought about including you, and here's why we weren't able to in this case. But the only way you can work through that is by actually talking about it.
Exactly. The third scenario, and I'll be brief, I have just become a supervisor and have inherited a longtime employee with performance issues. Apparently, the evals have not been, they've been satisfactory, not stellar, but not negative, that the new supervisor is wanting to set the tone for improved performance, and I believe he will be unreceptive to any suggestions for how to have this conversation. And this is a common one, I believe, maybe not with the evaluation, but performance issues certainly a difficult conversation that happens many times every day.
Yeah, that's another great question. So I think here again, it's about being as transparent and sort of explainy as possible. So I think the way most of us do it is we might just say, well, you know, they work for me now and I have different standards. So they didn't meet the standard. So we go in and say, look, you're not doing well enough or you need to do better. And the other person, the employee, is understandably, at best, they're confused, right? They're thinking, like, well, wait a second, I've been here for 5 years. What's going on? And then they start thinking, is this person after me? Are they out to get me for some reason? Or they're impossible, or they're trying to show me. And so we start jumping to those kinds of explanations. So the new boss, I think, probably should do one of two things. They should either, you know, wait and see how the performance is. And if it's not good, they should not just say, okay, you're not doing well enough. They should go in and say, you know, I want to tell you a little bit about my philosophy of where my expectations come from. And I understand they might be different. Here's how they're different from some other people, but here's where mine come from. Let's talk about them. You know, in any event, I'm the boss, and so this is what I'm expecting. So there's some background to where that comes from, and there's an explanation that, yeah, this isn't some weird thing that's happening. I actually understand that my expectations are different, and that's so you don't need to make up a story about that. It's actually they're actually somewhat different. The other way to handle it would be to sort of handle it at the very front end, to just say, you know, you're a new person here. You've been with the company for 5 years, I want to explain sort of my management style and what I look for. And you might even say, you know, here are some challenges that I've had in the past because of people transferring in, and the way that, you know, my expectations are the same or different from others. So you're talking it through, not assuming that people will just understand what's going on.
Right. We have an online question. As a manager, sometimes my direct report asks to schedule time with me to talk. They don't say about what, just, hey, can we go to lunch tomorrow? How do I prepare for a conversation where I'm not sure what the topic is?
Yeah. So two things. One is you could, going forward, looking to the future, you could ask your colleagues to tell you. It drives me crazy when someone leaves like a slightly agitated message for me. They're like, hey, can you call me back? It's really important. And then I can't get a hold of them, and I'm thinking, is there something terrible? You know, so now I'm stressed out for the next day until I can find that person. And then they say, oh, do you want to play golf tomorrow? I'm thinking, okay, so I didn't get any sleep because I was worried about this thing. And the question was, do you want to play golf?
Doug?
Yeah?
Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
So one thing is the future looking part, which is to just suggest to your colleagues that they give you a little bit of heads up on the topic. But the other is, let's say they don't and you're going to lunch, just to be in inquiry mode, you know, to be asking questions. So tell me what's going on, and to be really open to trying to understand what's happening. If you feel sabotaged, or like they're ambushing you, not sabotaged, ambushed.
Right.
And you're thinking, okay, you asked me to go to lunch, and then you hit me with this question, and I'm completely unprepared to answer it right now. I think you can say that. You know, if someone says, look, my salary is so-and-so, and why is it lower than so-and-so's, and that's not fair, and you're thinking, I actually have a lot of information about that, but I haven't looked at it. You know, I need to, like, do the research, or I need to look into it. I think it can be useful just to say, I'm glad you asked that. I don't want to just give you an answer off the top of my head. I want to go back and think about it and look into it.
And make sure that I'm giving correct information.
In situations like that, and not just lunches, but all sorts of situations like that, people say they want to get together, or they want to have lunch, or they want to have a meeting. I just naturally say, and what's the agenda?
Yeah, exactly.
And most people will tell you what the agenda is, and if it's a surprise, then you ought to be worried.
They won't tell you. You should be worried. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Lines are open. *7 if you're on the phone, or type your question and hit submit if you are online.
We got a question.
Okay. I have a question. The thing is that I had done a lot of extra work. I'd worked 15 hours a day, partly in Duke. I was assigned a project, and partly because one of my peers left, and partly because there were just lots of emergencies going on. So after about, I'd been here about 2 years, sat down with my boss and said, you know, based upon, you know, what I feel like I've contributed, I'd like to, you know, talk about what it would take to get a promotion and to be promoted. And he said, our structure's fixed. We've got a flat structure. We don't. Okay, so but 6 months later, they promoted a new hire. She had been with the company 6 months. She had only worked 40 hours a week, where I worked 15 to 12 hours a day for many months, and I did it in secret. I just found out about it. I'd heard rumors, and so I just, you know, inquired, and then she sent me an email with her new title, which was 2 levels above where she was hired. So she actually got a double promotion in secret. And when I went to ask my boss, you know, about, you know, my request for a promotion and in light of, you know, what I've been told, he became irate.
Mm-hmm.
And said, well, X has taken over, you know, doing this. And I said, but I took over that special project that's caused me to work the 15-hour days. I filled in for my peer who was gone for 6 months. I took care of X, Y, and Z. So I've also taken over a lot of work. And he never gave me an explanation as to why I didn't get a promotion after 2 years, but she gets a promotion after 6 months, not only a promotion, but a double promotion in secret. And so I was, you know, observing what is she doing that's different than me. And what I come up with is that she, unlike me at times, is very, very, very assertive. When my boss says, you know, we've got this emergency, I don't question it. I just stay till midnight and get it done. Where she says, no, she said, I'm not doing that unless you give me a promotion. She works 40 hours. And I thought, you know, because I've been told all along, thank you for staying till midnight, thank you for doing that, I thought they valued what I was doing. But I've come to believe that they don't.
I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute because our time is getting short. And, Doug, do you have just a quick answer or a quick suggestion?
Well, I can, you know, we can hear the frustration in your voice and in that situation. There's so many possibilities about what's going on. I wonder, it sounds like it's possible that either based on the situation or your boss's personality type, they're just not going to give you a good answer, or they're going to get angry in a way that doesn't help you in any way, to say the least. I guess I wonder whether there's someone else to talk to, because it sounds like you're doing the right things and you're reaching dead ends. So it might be that there's someone else in the organization that can sort of fill you in. I mean, people are hired and promoted for a whole range of reasons, and it may not be that you know, there's anything nefarious going on. It's just they needed some particular skill set of somebody. But it would be very reasonable for someone to be able to explain that to you so that you know what's going on and how you can get ahead. So I don't know whether there's someone else in your organization that might be, you know, a more even temperament who could actually explain that to you.
Thank you, Doug. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I think we had somebody else trying to get on there and ask a question, too. So whoever was, star 7. We're waiting.
If there are no other questions, I'd like to make some, or while you're thinking of your questions, I'd like to say a little bit more about Doug Moore's book, Thanks for the Feedback. And Doug, to put you on the spot in front of all these people, and I will, we'd love to have you back to talk about that at some point on one of these calls, because there's been a lot of interest in the difficult conversation, and I think your feedback book is really sort of flipped from how to give good feedback to how to receive good feedback and what to do with the information that you get. So I think that would be a great topic for a future call if you're up.
I'll commit here and now to doing that. I would love to do that.
Okay, great. Last call, last chance for questions, star 7.
Mary, would you just review the three mind shifts? I heard the last one was move from intent to impact, but I didn't catch the first two.
The first was to move from certainty to curiosity.
Move from what to curiosity?
Certainty.
Oh. Okay.
And the second was from blame to joint contribution. And if you'd like, it's on the slide that we had if you logged in. And if you didn't, if you will email tom@scarletleadership.com, he will send you the slide. Okay, Joe.
I just give you a passing ending piece of advice here. So many people think that, well, I have a difficult issue and it'll just go away. Well, in most cases, it won't just go away. And that was the purpose of today's call. And the book, Difficult Conversations by Doug, it's a fabulous roadmap of how to handle these difficult situations. So I suggest that you pick up the book somewhere and read it, and then we'll talk about his next book next time. And And Doug, I want to say thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing you at the retreat in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
I'd like to say one other thing, and that is our registration is already open for the October call, so if you want to register for that, please do.
Well, that's right. Marshall Goldsmith, he'll be another star.
He's great.
Thank you, everybody. That completes our conference call for this month. Again, if you'd like a copy of today's slides, just send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com, and I'll get it right out to you. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you all.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.